Chris Graham.
Welcome to Street Knowledge. I am Chris Graham, and we are going to be talking WWE Hell in a Cell here on our Facebook Live and our podcast tonight, and previewing the event coming up on Sunday night. I think we talked last week, those who joined us last week, and if you joined me for my preview of No Mercy, you heard me say something similar, that, boy, it seems like to me, good show coming up for Hell in a Cell. Now, No Mercy turned out maybe to not meet expectations, certainly, but this card is loaded really from top to bottom, literally. The main event is not the title match. I presume that the main event, we've been sold on this for the last couple weeks, is the Hell in a Cell singles match, Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens. We've also got another Hell in a Cell match, a tag team match. And I don't know that we've ever seen a Hell in a Cell tag team match. I might be wrong on that. Maybe someone will correct me on this as we go through this Facebook Live particularly. But it seems to me that this New Day Usos match for the tag championships in the Cell will be the first tag match, at least I can recall, in a Hell in a Cell type environment. Then we've got, outside of the Hell in a Cell, just on the pay-per-view itself, Shinsuke Nakamura challenging Jinder Mahal for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. We've got a women's title match, Charlotte Flair, got to call her by her right name now, challenging Natalya for the women's championship. A U.S. title match, loaded with title matches here. AJ Styles defending the U.S. championship against Baron Corbin. And then even the two openers, at least on the live show, to me are very interesting. Dolph Ziggler, Bobby Roode, former NXT champion, and then Randy Orton and Rusev. Randy Orton, of course, not too long ago was the world champion. And Rusev, of course, a recently former U.S. champion. And so, again, loaded top to bottom. Even the pre-show match. There's one kickoff show match. It involves the new tag team of Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable against the Hype Bros. And that should be, you know, as you're getting yourself set for the night, getting the WWE Network heated up, you know, getting logged on, that kind of thing, that could be, at least entertaining in the background as you're getting ready for the show, maybe having friends over to have that match going on in the background. I mean, I think the Gable-Benjamin tag team will eventually be a team that will compete for at the top level of the tag division as time goes on. And of course, Hype Brothers have been doing well on SmackDown off and on for the last couple of years. So I guess we'll start back at the top. We've kind of gone through the card. And, of course, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, anything you want me to sort of address more directly, feel free to comment through Facebook here, especially live. Of course, if you comment after the fact that we've posted this, we're doing this about 6:49 p.m. Live on Thursday night. I guess I could try to answer your questions later, but we'll, if you want to do it live, we had some people joining in our last Facebook Live last week when we talked about No Mercy. I think it kind of went well. So Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens, boy, they're really doing a great job as far as I'm concerned in WWE, building this feud and selling this feud. And it's been going on for several months, dating back to Kevin Owens, appearing on that now defunct, post SmackDown live talk show, talking smack, Owens, making a point to criticize Shane McMahon for not drafting him in the SmackDown Raw brand split last year, and then finally bringing him on board and claiming that Shane has been holding him back from having more opportunities on the SmackDown brand. And Shane has slowly but surely allowed himself to be dragged into now what is a singles match with a full-time top competitor in WWE. Shane, we talked on the last Facebook Live and podcast, is someone who works only a couple of matches a year. He worked last year's Hell in a Cell. He worked this year's WrestleMania, working this year's Hell in a Cell. But somehow always steals the show with the matches. Last year, of course, at Hell in a Cell, it was Undertaker. At WrestleMania, it was AJ Styles. And now with Kevin Owens, Shane, for a guy who wrestles literally a couple of matches a year and had a long period of time off in between before he came back here about a year and a half ago, when he was in China trying to jumpstart a new online venture, Long time in between wrestling gigs for Shane. He can routinely put on these great matches. And of course, with Kevin Owens in the ring, Kevin is, in my opinion, the quintessential heel in pro wrestling right now. He's at the top of the game of the heels in pro wrestling right now. Kevin will bring out the best in Shane McMahon, and the best in Shane McMahon is pretty damn good. So I look forward to this match as the conclusion of the Hell in a Cell show. As far as predicting who wins, I mean, honestly, you know, you never want your part-time talents beating your full-time talents, because your full-time talents are the guys who, after this is over, Shane's going to continue to appear on TV in the role of COO of SmackDown. They're calling him and Stephanie are the COOs of those various two brand shows. He'll be on TV once a week, but he won't be out there selling tickets on Thursdays and Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays and Tuesdays for WWE. Kevin Owens will. And so Kevin needs the win, but that doesn't mean that Shane can't put on a heck of a match and make it look convincing. I think that's kind of the direction things are going to go. You're going to see several near falls. You're going to see carnage. You're going to see somebody flying off a cage, most likely. In fact, at this point, with all the walk-up and talk-up to the event, I think you'll be disappointed if you don't see a five-star match out of these two. So look forward to that one. The New Day Usos match has to come before that match on the show schedule, only because once you drop that big cage, I assume it stays down. New Day and Usos, boy, both are four-time WWE Tag Team Champions. I mentioned this last week, and I think it bears repeating. I love the Usos as heels. I didn't like them at all as faces. I just thought they were, I thought that, you know, their gimmick was not good at the beginning, and I got tired of it as it went on. New Day, man, you know, it's funny. Usos started as faces. They're now great heels. New Day started as heels, and now they're great faces. And I love the fact, you know, I think it could have been tempting for WWE to break up New Day. No reason why. I just, the WWE tends to like to break up a good thing when it has it. New Day, not only four-time tag team champions, but then also the New Day had that longest reign for at least modern era of WWE, that tag team championship reign going 400 plus days. I love them, and I'll agree with Ken Ray Hunter, excuse me. New Day. I mean, I love New Day. So thanks, Ken, for commenting. New Day, the gimmick is great, and you know what they work in the ring. And it, you know, I love the Freebird rule. You know, if you're a longtime wrestling fan, you know what I'm talking about there. Three members of a tag team, any two can defend the belts at any time. We call it the Freebird rule because the Fabulous Freebirds of the early to mid 1980s, of course, they went on for quite a while after. Back in World Class Championship Wrestling in Texas. Any two of the three members of the Freebirds could defend championships whenever they were tag team champions. Terry Bam Bam Gordy, Michael PSAs, and Buddy Roberts. And then the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling used a similar rule with the Russians when, Ivan Nikita Koloff and Crusher Khrushchev held the tag team championships for a while. I think it was 85 and 86. They used that rule well, so you know, you get different feels out of the different New Day combinations. And the Usos, again, man, they're rocking and rolling as a heel tag team. So I look for, and seeing these two teams in a Hell in a Cell match is going to be interesting. Not quite sure how. I mean, I'm expecting a great match, and just not sure how the dynamic will work with the third member of New Day. I presume the third member of New Day is not allowed in the cage, but we'll see how that works out. So I expect maybe not a five-star match. Can't expect every match to be a five-star match, but I expect this one to be a four-star match out of New Day and Usos for the tag belts. And I love this feud. And I can't have enough of this feud. I think that we could easily, have this one going on for another year. I don't care. Maybe come find some other dance partners from time to time, but always come back to New Day and Usos. For the WWE World Belt, Jinder Mahal defending against Shinsuke Nakamura. I think I mentioned last time, and I think I still will stick with, if Nakamura doesn't win the belt this time, I think, you know, you might see him have to go back into the mid-card for a while. So I think the writing's on the wall that Nakamura probably leaves Hell in a Cell with the belt, just because, you know, he is the rock star of WWE. He was the rock star in NXT. You know, the fans love him. He doesn't speak English very well. He's trying. He's learning. You can tell he's been trying to beef up his game there. But he still has a connection with the fans that not a lot of guys have. And Jinder Mahal, I think, has been playing just a great heel. I know that, you know, when he first won the belt and beating Randy Orton for the belt a few months ago, he had been a jobber for the longest time, dating back to that horrible three-man band gig that he and Drew McIntyre were both stuck with, along with Heath Slater. Comes back after some time on the shelf with a new look, the new muscular look, and then the two Stooges, the Singh brothers. And I think they've been playing that well. I said last month going into the SummerSlam match between Mahal and Nakamura that I thought Mahal needed to win that match to be able to sort of add legitimacy to his title reign. I mean, it felt like it may have been too short if it ended a month and a half ago, his title reign. But I think now you've got enough. I think Mahal's got enough cachet, so to speak, to he can lose the belt Sunday night. Nakamura can take it and run with it. Maybe that, you know, have a rematch next month. And Mahal's a player now. I mean, it's not a fluke reign at this point. Bray Wyatt, for example, had the WWE belt earlier this year. You look back on that now, and he continues to job to guys over on the Raw brand now. And it does. You don't even want to remember that Bray Wyatt was WWE champion at WrestleMania. Jinder Mahal, I think he's had the belt long enough. He's done enough with the belt to justify at this point maybe handing it over and then letting Nakamura run with it for a while, maybe up through at least Royal Rumble. We'll see. I mean, ideally for me, we would have Nakamura versus AJ Styles at WrestleMania. That's my dream match. But I think Nakamura probably leaves with the belt on Sunday night. We'll go down now to the other world title match on the card. It's for the Women's World Championship, Natalya defending against Charlotte. And I said this last week, and I think it again bears repeating. To me, the women's division in WWE being split the way it is, I think down the line, I think the best solution for WWE with its women's division is to put all the women back into one card, back into one roster. And maybe even branch it out into its own show, perhaps like, you know, the 205 Live. I'd love to see the women have their own show and have Charlotte and Becky and Sasha losing some names here and actually then have a full roster of champions too, not just a world champion, but also, you know, some version of like the U.S. or Intercontinental Championship that the ladies can compete for, a tag team championship. I'd love to see women's tag team championship revived. And then, you know, the women could then wrestle on either the Raw or SmackDown shows to get that promotion from the cable TV contract, so to speak. But I'd love to see them all back on one card. Now, I don't know if, you know, that's ever going to be the case, but I think that will make good business sense to me. As far as the Charlotte and Natalya match, you know, Charlotte has been out of the spotlight since about WrestleMania, maybe a little bit before that. It's probably been good for her to recharge her batteries a little bit. You know, carrying the weight of the division on your shoulders when you carry that championship can be tiring. But she is clearly the best performer in the, at least on a SmackDown brand. I think her and Sasha, you know, kind of like I said about New Day and Usos, I'd love to see Charlotte and Sasha, I don't care how many times you can see them. I want to see them wrestle each other. They put on so many great matches that I can't get tired of that. Charlotte's probably ready to take the belt. I think that Natalya's done her job as a sort of interstitial champion, holding the belt long enough to get it to somebody else. Charlotte, I think, is poised to take away the belt. Getting to the U.S. title match now, I mentioned AJ Styles and my dream match at WrestleMania, at least from the SmackDown brand, being Nakamura defending against AJ. or AJ defending against Nakamura, I don't care, as long as they're against each other, with a belt probably in tow, so that it can give the fans something to sort of aim for. You look at AJ versus Corbin, though. This has been a nicely developed feud. You know, I was very critical here on the podcast, Facebook Live, and also in columns of the decision by WWE to take that Money in the Bank briefcase off of Baron Corbin the way they did. He loses, you know, he cashes it in at the end of a SmackDown show right before SummerSlam, and then loses that match to Mahal. And it just seemed like, wow, you know, to me, even a bigger prop than the belts are. Belt, that's all title belts are in wrestling. They're just props. They're just something that we give to guys or gals to say they're legit. We're recognizing them as being great. Now you need to do the same thing. The Money in the Bank briefcase is even a better prop than that, because it has the uncertainty factor that wrestling is great with, you know. Dating, but think about the chills that go down your spine when you think about outside interference or guys coming down to help other guys out. Now that, of course, the music plays, it kind of gives away the secrecy, but you know, the uncertainty of think back a couple years ago at WrestleMania when Seth Rollins turned the Money in the Bank briefcase in during the Brock Lesnar Roman Reigns match. I popped. And you know, taking that away from Corbin, now you don't get to use it for, you know, until next year, until next May, I guess, when that pay-per-view comes back up again. That was a waste. But that said, the Corbin character has gotten a lot more developed in the last few weeks since he lost that. It's been sort of a rallying cry for him to say, hey, you know, I've been getting screwed. He was already a heel, but he's been becoming a bit of a monster heel. As far as AJ's concerned, AJ doesn't need a belt to legitimize AJ. AJ is the former world champion. He's been a great defending U.S. champion for a while now. You know, I could easily see Corbin walking away with that belt Sunday night because, you know, it was sort of, you know, he lost the briefcase. Give him a belt, though, and you can really put legitimacy in the eyes of a lot of fans out there to say, okay, That finally cements that Baron Corbin's pretty good. And Corbin, to my knowledge, to my memory, has not had a belt at all during his time in WWE. He never got to that main event status back in NXT. Now, he won that Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania a couple years ago, but no belt that I can remember that Corbin's held. So starting with the U.S. belt, beating a guy like AJ Styles to get there would be a nice sort of elevation for Baron Corbin. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that end up being the case. So now Ken Ray Hunter, he's finally going to be happy. A few minutes ago, his last comment was, glorious. Here we go. We're going to talk about the Bobby Roode-Dolph Ziggler match. I'm a big Bobby Roode fan. I'm not a fan, though, of what WWE has done with Bobby Roode since he made his main roster debut. Roode, of course, from his days in TNA, Impact Wrestling, whatever you want to call it now, he alternated between a face and a heel, mostly heel there. He was a great heel in NXT. The guy who came out first promo talks about how he's going to make NXT go to the next level, and that he played that arrogant heel so well. Of course, the Glorious theme song played into that perfectly. I mean, and it's the best ring entrance right now in pro wrestling, and that says a lot, because I think AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura have great ring entrance songs. But Roode clearly gets the fans. I mean, he's got the fans on his side, and I guess the people writing SmackDown decided, hey, you know, we've got something on our hands here that's resonating with fans. So let's run with him as a face. I'm not buying it. I mean, I think in the end, Roode needs to be an arrogant heel. You can't be an arrogant face. I mean, and if you take his arrogance away, then you kind of neuter him a bit. We love the song. We loved it. We loved the song and loved his entrances and loved his work in NXT when he was a heel. So maybe, and I hope this is the case, you know, this brief little bit of burst of activity with him as a face is just oriented to getting him sort of in front of the faces of the main roster fans. I know WWE doesn't want to presume that its fans who watch on on SmackDown on USA and Raw on USA every week, then also watch religiously the NXT brand on the WWE Network. So often when they bring the guys up to the card, they'll bring them in slowly. Nakamura got a slow roll to the top. I think he even started with Ziggler, and even a few times just appearing on camera, not wrestling, and then wrestling dark matches after the SmackDown shows. I understand that they want to break guys in slowly, especially after last year when Finn Balor didn't get that break in and ended up hurting himself, and after they gave him a belt, he only got to hold for a day. But that said, I think that after what I presume is going to be a win against Dolph Ziggler, and I love Dolph Ziggler as a not only the character, I love what his arrogance lately, his great mic work. We remember from back in the days when he was working with Vicky Guerrero. I mean, he's always been great on the mic. Underutilized as far as his work rate in the ring. I think his concussion issues from a few years ago probably played into that. But he's lately been the stepping stone. It's kind of like, you know, back in the days when people cared about boxing. There was always that guy that you had to beat to be able. If you beat this guy, then you got to next box the champ. Ziggler's sort of that guy. He's sort of the entry-level guy. Hey, you beat me. Now you're ready for mid-card status. You got to get past me to get up the ladder. Kind of like when you play a video game, right? You get level 1, level 2, level 3, and you're trying to get to level 10. Ziggler is just one of those way stations on your way to top of the card status. Boy, that's going to be a hell of a match. Let's just say that. Dolph Ziggler, Bobby Roode is going to be a hell of a match the show, and it's going to be probably the second match on the card. I presume the first match, the opening match, at least on the live card starting at 8 o'clock, will be Randy Orton Rusev. And I've had enough of this one, to be honest with you. Hopefully this one's quick like the last one that was on our pay-per-view show when Orton hit Rusev with an RKO out of nowhere about 3 seconds into the match, and that was it. I'm kind of over Rusev as a character. I think that I talked earlier about how surprised I am that WWE has not ruined the New Day by splitting them apart. And they, for whatever reason, creative likes to do that with talents, split up a good thing and make it less than what it was. Rusev, boy, back in his day, and I've talked about this before, and I don't care if I repeat it. Rusev, his now real life wife, and I'm why am I losing her name? She hasn't even been on TV for a while, but boy, when she was speaking for him, and using that great Russian accent that she can fake, and they'd come out for shows, praising Vladimir Putin. This is back before the presidential election. Maybe that's too hot right now, still, and maybe will be for a while. But when he was praising Putin and she was praising Putin, he was the monster heel for a while there. I mean, of course, his size, but also just, you know, the classic foreign heel. I mean, a guy rooting for our nation's worst enemy. And then they split him apart and had her go wrestle and on her own. And Rusev has been on his own for a while. That took whatever steam they had away. And Rusev's now, he's a show opener. And he's not too far from being a kickoff match guy, probably after this loss right here. And Orton... Orton, last year was wrestling Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, that famous beatdown match. He was a champion recently as around WrestleMania season this year. I don't know. His stat, when you look at the rest of the card, you look at the rest of the SmackDown roster right now, Orton is a guy that he doesn't need a belt. He doesn't need to compete for a championship. He's Randy Orton. He's got the RKO. He's much better as a heel than he is as a face, and right now he's being forced into that face role. I think that Orton is being miscast right now, and that match, there's just nothing compelling. That'll be another one that when the show starts, I hope this is the first match. If it's after Ziggler Rude opens up, that'll be a hot match to start the show with. So I couldn't fault the guys for doing that, but. The Orton Rusev match will be the trip to the bathroom and maybe make sure you got your popcorn needs and whatever else taken care of that you need as far as that goes, because there's nothing compelling about Orton Rusev at this stage. We've already seen it. It's not been good. let's find these guys different dance partners if we can. So that wraps it up. I mean, you know, as far as the rundown of the card, I think it's going to be a good card. I hope that the booking is better than what we saw for No Mercy. That's the thing that bothered. No Mercy had a great card at the top, maybe not so much at the bottom, but the booking decisions, the finishes and everything else, just not interesting at all, and in fact just a little deflating. I'm not going to say that if, you know, I've kind of given predictions on who's going to win these matches from top to bottom. I'm not as invested in who wins for the most part here. I do think Nakamura, I mean, I'm a Nakamura mark, so hope Nakamura leaves with a belt. But as far as the others, you know, I don't have a rooting interest, so to speak, in who wins and who loses. I'm just expecting, and I hope this is the case. I hope these matches come off well. I mean, AJ Styles and Baron Corbin. AJ Styles is one of the best workers in the business. Baron Corbin, a guy, a big, you play the classic big guy. Ziggler, Rude. I expect both those guys to just, you know, knock our socks off as far as that goes. New Day Usos, I talked about that at length. I think that's going to be a hell of a match. Mahal, Nakamura. I think the psychology of that match will be really interesting, and you know, the fact that I think they're very different competitors in the ring. I'm not sure their styles really work great in tandem, but I think the psychology of the match can be really interesting, and thus of note for later on. The Shane KO thing, again, I think from everything that match has everything from psychology to great performers. It's gonna be a hell of a match. So. Really, really looking forward to this show Sunday night. And, of course, here at Augusta Free Press, what we like to do after a one of the bigger shows, we like to jump back on here on Facebook Live, and we'll have a sort of a Facebook Live recap, just like we've done here as far as a preview goes. And we'll get, you know, you guys involved, your questions, comments, your thoughts on the booking, your thoughts on the finishes, who wins, who loses, where things go from here. And if you've never been a part of one of these before, after one of the major pay-per-views, and we're going to consider this one, Hell in a Cell, to me, is certainly made its way up into that pantheon of the major pay-per-views. You know, these can go on for over an hour. We can have hundreds of comments from fans out there, and it's hard for me to keep up with everybody who wants to have a question asked, which is great for me. It makes what I do so much easier than if I'm just talking to myself. So please join us around 11 o'clock Sunday night, you know, sometime around that time, 11 o'clock Sunday night, when the show ends, basically. We'll get together and we'll talk some more pro wrestling. In the meantime, I want to do a pitch here real quick for something I've got. I've been talking off and on. If you watch this regularly, listen regularly on the podcast, you've heard me talk about how I'm working on a book about the pro wrestling business and my involvement. You know, the quick and dirty of it is I worked for a company called Awesome Wrestling Entertainment that 6 years ago helped put on a wrestling pay-per-view called Night of the Legends. And it was a fun time. I was doing some research a few months ago about one of the guys who worked on that show with us, and I came across his Wikipedia entry, which noted that he had it was Jamin Olivencia, who was Ohio Valley Wrestling Champion for a couple of years back, a few years ago. How Jamin was part of the infamous Night of the Legends show. And that, reading about this infamous Night of the Legends show, which I helped write, which I helped breathe to life, made me think, wow, infamous? I don't remember it being infamous. I mean, it was our one shot at glory. We didn't make it. I got curious. I'd never read, I guess I either avoided or whatever, the reviews of the show right afterwards. But I here in 2017, 6 years later, Google searched reviews of Night of the Legends and found lots of stuff, and none of it was positive. And so anyway, that spurred me to write a book. I wanted to tell the story of this pay-per-view that lives in infamy for some reason. There were lots of glitches and that kind of thing. And I'm calling the book, kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of not, I'm calling the book The Worst Wrestling Pay-Per-View Ever. That's going to get your attention. What I really hope to do with the book is explain how an indie company books house shows and then ends up, in our case, we ended up booking a house show that became a live pay-per-view. And the behind the scenes of booking a live pay-per-view. And you know, I think for wrestling fans out there, and I'm a wrestling fan, obviously. I spend a lot of time thinking about it, too much time probably thinking about it. It is an interesting business to really get involved in from this standpoint. I mean, the book is I've got it now. The first draft is done. It's going to be about 100 pages. It's not a long read, but 100 pages of stories about how we built this show from the ground up, and how maybe some of the decisions we made led to some of the snafus that occurred during the show. From a technical standpoint, largely, and there was one at the end. I won't give it away. No spoiler alerts here, but there was one thing at the end that got out of our control, and the performers in the ring went into business for themselves, to use wrestling terminology. And that's the big story of the book, though, is just how the sausage is made, I guess. And hopefully it's entertaining. Hopefully it's interesting. The goal is now, my original goal, I started working on this book back, I want to say in April. Life happens. My goal had been to have it out and ready for you to buy 1st of September. Here it is now, the first week of October. I've got the draft done. I got a couple of at least read-throughs to do before it's completely done. It'll be available only online. You'll have to go to like Amazon Kindle to download and read. So as not to have to, for us, not to have to bear the expense of printing books, which can be prohibitive sometimes. But we're going to put a low barrier of entry to a low cost. $5.99 will be the cost for this book. And so I'm looking forward to being able to get that out there. And so I just wanted to tease that a little bit. My goal is now to have it sometime maybe first or second week of November available for sale right in time of Christmas season. So perfect opportunity to perhaps buy this gift for yourself, or have a significant other buy it for you as a Christmas gift. You'll learn some. Hopefully you'll learn something about how the business works behind the scenes. I kind of pull the curtain back and let you know, literally, from the gorilla position on a live TV show, how a wrestling show is done from start to finish. And humbly say I think it'll be a good read. But that's going to be coming up a little bit down the line. Let's see. So there were a couple of comments, and I think I'll go ahead for the podcast listeners. Of course, you're beholden to me now reading my Facebook comments. But I wish they would bring back the three stages of hell. Yeah, that would be interesting too. Perhaps for simplification purposes, it's, for example, WWE can go overboard. What was that match? Mahal versus Orton at the pay-per-view, one of the pay-per-views this summer, where they did a bamboo steel cage match or whatever that was supposed to be. And all the bamboo was just the yellow paint on the steel cage. And we couldn't see, I mean, it was a double cage or something. Like, he had to get out one cage and get into another cage. There was a cage around the ring, if I recall, and then a cage around the outside part of the barrier area. You had to climb out of both of those. Sometimes, like, I'm a little worried about the War Games. NXT is reviving the War Games concept, and I was thinking about this. I'm an avid long distance runner. I run 3 times a week, 10 miles per run, and that's a lot of time out there on the trail to think about things. And I was thinking about War Games in my mind back when WCW did them back in the 80s and into the 90s. War Games was always much better on paper than it turned out to be. Yeah, Punjabi match. Thank you, Michael Rhoda. The War Games to me were always better, on paper than they were in reality. One thing I don't like about the War Games is because of what you got to do. You got to set the two rings up beside each other to have the concept. You enter one cage, there's guys entering from another and that kind of thing. You have those two rings set up for the entire show. So, to me, it's just a weird experience. Like, the other matches on a card with a War Games on it are impacted by the War Games match itself, because all of a sudden, one of your sides of your ring has another ring. So, I mean, yeah, they try to use it. They'll throw guys over the top rope and they land in the other ring, and, guys can run back and forth. But it just changes the nature of the card so much that I never liked those shows. I always wanted to, Well, I remember that first War Games. It was the Horsemen against, what, Sting and Dusty and Lex Luger, probably. I can't think of who the other competitor would have been. You know, the Road Warriors were probably involved. Maybe I'm, you know, kind of hazy in my head here. But the other matches were impacted so much. Plus, for fans at the live show, you know, ringside, you know, if you're so fortunate to be on the other side of the second ring when they have the matches during the show, they tend to have them in one ring for TV camera purposes. You know, all of a sudden you're looking over another ring to see what's going on. It seems so far away. I don't know. I love the concept, but I don't end up liking the result. And so Hell in a Cell, you know, simplified the way it is. Okay, here's what we know is going to happen. At least once, maybe in both matches, somebody's going to fall off top of that cage and land on a table. Hopefully that's set up to be protective so that they land on it and it doesn't kill them. But, you know, unlike when Mick Foley took the second fall, the one through the cage in that match with Undertaker way back when, the first Hell in a Cell, I think it was the first Hell in a Cell, you know, he knew he was going to jump off the top rope and land on a table the first time. He knew that. I mean, it still doesn't make it any easier to land on a table from that height. But when he took the choke slam through the cage, that was not the through the cage part wasn't planned. So hopefully nothing like that happens. But hopefully, you know, but we know that, you know, you're going to watch Hell in a Cell match. Somebody, Shane McMahon, is going to jump off the cage. Whether he lands on KO or not, he's going to jump off that cage. He's going to land on a table. New Day and Usos, I'm not sure how that's going to work. Again, I don't think there's been, and maybe I'm wrong on this, I don't think there has been a tag team Hell in a Cell match, at least that I can recall. That said, I'm really interested to see what happens. Now, hopefully this sets a trend and we have a Hell in a Cell tag team match every year from here on out. That'd be awesome. You know, sometimes you can over-gimmick a gimmick match, and I hope they don't do that with these. I'm thinking again. Yeah, I guess they added a stip at for the Shane KO match that is an ODQ match. I think that's right. If that's the case, I mean, what you're implying there is that still. Oh no, it's false count anywhere. That's right. I'm sorry. Hopefully beating somebody to the punch there. But if you're typing it, go ahead and finish the type and go ahead and post it. But a false count anywhere. Okay, so what that tells us is. It's a Hell in a Cell, falls count anywhere. It's not going to end in the cell, which is fine, but you don't have the stipulation if you're not going to use it. So, and Tim Witt, I don't know if I disagree. Usos winning, that'd be kind of, you know, to me, something has to happen like that. For the Usos have to beat New Day to have this feud have some more legs. And I want it to have legs. I want to see more Usos and New Day. So if that's what it takes, you know, I'm down day one as far as that goes. I want to see more of New Day and Usos. Kind of like you couldn't get enough. I mean, I'm thinking back in the day, couldn't get enough Rock and Roll Express against the Koloffs. Eventually, you know, it was over, but you know, I'm not looking forward to the end of this one. I want to see at least a couple matches out of New Day and Usos. And so, an Usos win might make that happen. I think Sammy will help Owens. That's interesting. Michael Rota with an interesting. Interesting. Now you're getting into some thought process here. You make it false count anywhere. You know, I guess Sammy Sammy's not been used well at all since he went to the main roster, and particularly since he went to SmackDown. But yeah, he's been on camera lately warning Shane about how dangerous KO is, right? So, interesting. I think that's an intriguing possibility, Michael Rota. This is part of what I think makes wrestling so fun for us is I was looking over at the time and I didn't realize we were almost 40 minutes into this. I thought I was like 10 minutes into this podcast and Facebook Live. What makes wrestling so fun for us as fans is, we know it's a work and we know that this is the card, but and you know, somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. But yeah, to me, that fun, the uncertainty of going into a show like this is the fun part. The idea that, you know, for example, Sammy Owens could be either a guy turning heel, guy turning face, somebody turning on somebody else. Those are always the things that get us sort of energized. You know, as much as we can be cynical and say, oh, yeah, we know what's going to happen and we know this, that, and the other. It's that thing that comes out of nowhere that gets you happy and surprised. So So, Michael, we're going to hold you to this. Hopefully, you'll be able to join us on Sunday night. We'll do in case you just joined us and we're getting ready to wrap up our podcast and Facebook Live today. But we will do this again on Sunday night, right after the show's over, around 11 o'clock on Sunday night, depending on when the show ends. And we'll do our own recap here. And keep asking questions, keep making comments, and we'll compare notes here. I've kind of made some of my predictions here. We'll kind of all weigh in together and judge this show, and hopefully we are going to be entertained. So looking forward to Hell in a Cell. 8 o'clock, the live show begins on Sunday night. And again, 11 o'clock here on Augusta Free Press on Facebook. We'll talk about it all. Until then, we'll sign off. Chris Graham here on Augusta Free Press and the Street Knowledge Podcast. And look forward to talking again soon.